From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, he burned fast and bright the brief, tumultuous tenure of Anthony Scaramucci, and how President Putin's bet on a Trump presidency backfired spectacularly. It's Tuesday, August 1st. Thrush.
Hey.
Hell of a time.
Amazing day.
And you're ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Oh, geez, this is not a good sign. Are you yawning?
Not about you.
Okay. Glenn Thrush, this was like the breaking news alert for the ages.
Good day, everyone. We're breaking in with news of another shakeup for the Trump administration. White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci is now out of that position just over a week into the job.
Give us the play-by-play of this 10-day stretch that Anthony Scaramucci had as White House Communications Director.
What happened here was you have a guy who was essentially brought in to blow up the existing order of the White House. Mm-hmm. And in the course of it, he detonated himself. I mean, this is what somebody in the West Wing described to me as he was a political suicide bomber.
That's very vivid.
Well, it started off a couple of Fridays ago.
Listen, I don't think I'd be standing here if I didn't have a good relationship with the president. I love the president.
When the president tapped him as a communications director.
I'm very, very loyal to him, and I'm going to do the best I can with my heart and soul on this job and try to serve him the best way that I can.
And that prompted this whole cascade.
I'd like to read a statement from the president on the resignation of Press Secretary Sean Spicer.
Spicer was somebody actually who the president wanted to retain, and Spicer said no.
I wish him continued success as he moves on to pursue new opportunities. Just look at his great television ratings.
And he, as it turned out, presciently said he thought Scaramucci would engender more chaos and actually make the situation worse. Then over the course of the next couple of days, he proceeded to tell people inside the West Wing essentially that he was the new sheriff in town.
Scaramucci,
that he was going to fire people.
You're either going to stop leaking or you're going to get fired.
And he threatened to get rid of all these different leakers.
They don't stop leaking. I'm going to put them out on Pennsylvania Avenue. It's a very clear thing. You want to sell postcards to the tourists outside the gate, or do you want to work in the West Wing? What do you want to do? If you want to work in the West Wing, you got to stop leaking.
And then, of course, came this infamous now interview with Ryan Lizza of The New Yorker last week.
With the first one, I mean, these quotes are remarkable. That, you know, if people are at home, there's some words in here we're obviously not going to read.
In which he accused, on the record, Reince Priebus of being the main leaker in the White House.
He starts off with Reince is a expletive, paranoid, schizophrenic, a paranoiac.
Glenn, do we have any reason to believe that that is true, that Priebus is someone who leaked about the president?
We have nothing to believe that Priebus is leaking any more than anybody else in the West Wing.
And he compared himself to Bannon.
And he said something anatomically uncharitable about Steve Bannon, the chief strategist. Anatomically uncharitable.
I'm not Steve Bannon. I'm not trying to blank my own expletive. I'm not trying to build my own brand off the blanking strength of the president. I'm here to serve the country.
Not to get too vivid, but he basically said that Steve Bannon was somebody who was performing the role of a White House advisor for his own benefit.
Exactly, which is the ultimate damning indictment of an aide in the Trump era.
So this New Yorker interview falls, as I recall, on Scaramucci's one-week anniversary.
Right. And already that would have been enough for 1 week. And then the tabloid avalanche really came down on him. There was a report that Scaramucci's wife was looking to divorce him.
According to published reports, she has filed for divorce over his naked political ambition.
Then came another report that Scaramucci was not present for the birth of his own child, that he was with President Trump during that period of time.
Anthony reportedly texted his wife, "Congratulations, I'll pray for our child."
Okay, so then on Friday.
And just when you thought it was safe to go to happy hour, there's more breaking news tonight. About 24 hours after it was revealed, the new White House communications director called him an effing paranoid schizophrenic and accused him of being a leaker. Chief of Staff Reince Priebus is out as chief of staff. General John Kelly is in.
John Kelly comes in to replace Reince Priebus as chief of staff. Tell us a little bit about General Kelly.
He's a former four-star Marine general. He is somebody who has served with distinction in Afghanistan. He is somebody who is known at the Department of Homeland Security for imposing a military-style structure on things. And not surprisingly, he was somewhat reluctant to take this job because he knows how chaotic the lines of authority are. During meetings with the president over the last couple of weeks, really, he essentially demanded that he be given the rightful authority of a chief of staff. Hmm. And the president of the United States for now said yes. And that includes tucking Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump into that, that they no longer can freelance and walk up to him and give him ideas.
Wow.
We'll see how that goes. But it was that sort of guarantee, at least a verbal guarantee, that brought Kelly on board. And once Kelly was on board, I think Scaramucci's minutes were numbered.
So just quickly, why would President Trump, who, as we've talked about many times on the show, and you and Maggie and Peter Baker have written, does not seem to like clear lines of authority. Why does he suddenly appoint a four-star general as his chief of staff?
The one area of authority that the president will accept is military authority. Hmm. This is something he feels more comfortable with. So if someone's going to impose order on him, Michael, it's going to be a military man.
We just swore in General Kelly. He will do a spectacular job, I have no doubt.
Okay, so what happens next? Did the president change his mind suddenly about Scaramucci, or did Kelly persuade him that hiring Scaramucci had been a mistake?
Both. So the president was already souring on Scaramucci. We've heard mixed things on this. There was a sense probably that initially in the aftermath of the Lizza interview with The New Yorker that the president thought it was kind of gutsy, but that didn't last. And it was, we are told, the final tabloid outburst, and not necessarily The New Yorker interview, that did him in, that turned President Trump against him. Kelly came in and I think cut the final cord, and that was it for him.
Okay, so Glenn, let me just recap this. Anthony Scaramucci comes in and promptly helps get Reince Priebus, the president's chief of staff, fired, or maybe accelerates it. But the man who is chosen to replace Priebus comes in and promptly gets Scaramucci fired. And you could argue, perhaps, that Kelly might never have been hired had Scaramucci not gotten Priebus fired. So in other words, Scaramucci sets in motion his own firing.
He does, but it also indicates to you the way that things get done in this White House. Hmm. It is a chaos and catastrophe-oriented organization. So things have to get bad before they'll get better. And a lot of people in the West Wing think that Kelly might be the best chance the president has to turn things around. So we may be seeing this lurching, stumbling movement towards something that approaches stability. That's at least the hope of the people who work for the president.
Glenn, finally, do you predict that Sean Spicer comes back now, the man who left because Scaramucci came in? Does he make a triumphant return?
Nobody had a better week than Sean Spicer. Not only did he get out of a situation that seemed to a lot of us to be untenable, he is now represented by Bob Barnett, one of the power brokers in Washington, D.C. Getter of big book advances. Not only that, but the guy he warned the president not to hire Scaramucci lasts 11 days. So the question is, does Sean Spicer, somebody who has both an affinity for tolerating a lot of pain, but somebody who loves the spotlight, does he decide to stick around or does he continue with his plan to get out of there? I think my sense is that Spicer will be getting out of there, but he's taking his time. He's going to be there for another couple of weeks.
Right. It's like write the tell-all or rejoin the team.
What would you do?
I'm a writer. Glenn, thank you very much.
No worries.
We'll be right back. Over the past few days, as President Trump reluctantly agreed to sign a law imposing sanctions against Russia, and President Vladimir Putin responded by ordering the U.S. to cut hundreds of workers from its diplomatic staff in Moscow, it felt official. The relationship both men had hoped for has become an impossibility. David Sanger, I want to get to the current state of things. But first, take me back to the start of this relationship between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. Hopes were very high at the start of it. What do we know about how these two men came to admire each other? Who started it?
We think it was simultaneous. We know more, Michael, about what Donald Trump thought about Vladimir Putin back before he was running for president, because there was a Miss Universe contest in Moscow.
One of these ladies is going to become Miss Universe 2013, and it's happening right here in Moscow. Let's go!
And because Donald Trump was trying to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, he wrote some about his excitement about going to Moscow and his hope that he would meet Putin. And at various moments, he's been highly complimentary of him.
He is really very much of a leader. I mean, you can say, oh, isn't that a terrible thing he called him? I mean, the man has very strong control over a country.
But if you believe the American intelligence assessments, when Putin first ordered interference in the U.S. election, it was not necessarily to support Donald Trump. His intention, first, to disrupt the election, and second, to call into question the legitimacy of Hillary Clinton's election.
Right.
Because the Russians assumed she would get elected. At some moment, Putin switched gears and came to the determination that Donald Trump might actually win and he ought to go off and support him. Putin must have thought, hey, this is the only American candidate who has stood up and questioned why the United States and Europe are sanctioning Russia for the annexation of Crimea.
What do you think generally about sanctions against Russia?
I think we ought to get on with our lives.
This is the only American candidate who is up there suggesting that maybe these sanctions are no longer in American interest.
So, David, how do we get from here, where Putin feels pretty good and Trump wants this better relationship, to where we are now, where things have gotten so bad?
And you may recall that there was a moment at the very end of the Obama presidency.
I'm going to read part of the president's statement, and it reads this way. Today, I have ordered a number of actions in response to the Russian government's aggressive harassment of U.S. officials and cyber operations aimed at the U.S. election.
We now know that there had been a series of conversations between Michael Flynn, then the National Security Advisor designate, and Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador. And we believe that in the course of those conversations, Mr. Flynn urged the Russians not to overreact to the Obama sanctions and may have suggested, we don't know yet, don't worry, we'll take care of it later. That was sort of the implication of it. Whether those words were spoken, we do not know.
So you're saying that was a big moment.
A very big moment. A very big moment. And it gave Putin reason to believe that Trump would follow through on his campaign promises to seek to better the relationship and perhaps review the sanctions once he got in. Almost as soon as Donald Trump gets inaugurated.
As Donald Trump begins his presidency, some of his former advisors are being investigated for possible links to Russian officials.
Trump's national security advisor is under investigation by U.S. counterintelligence agents for communications he's had with Russian officials.
I was disappointed to learn that the facts that have been conveyed to me by General Flynn were inaccurate.
The underlying conduct that General Flynn had engaged in was problematic in and of itself.
President Trump has fired the acting attorney general.
The FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government.
Historic shakeup in Washington. President Trump firing FBI Director James Comey.
The deputy Rod Rosenstein today took himself out of overseeing the Russia investigation, turning that over to Robert Mueller.
We are focused now, as we have been all morning, on Donald Trump Jr. and these emails.
So then the revelations just keep coming.
We now know that Donald Trump Jr. received a series of emails last June in which he was offered unspecified dirt on Hillary Clinton, dirt he was told would come from the Russian government.
The Donald Trump Jr. meeting has a big effect in Congress.
On its face, this is very problematic. We cannot allow foreign governments to reach out to anybody's campaign and say, we'd like to help you. That is a non-starter.
Because suddenly, on a Russia sanctions bill that has been kicking around,
the legislation we're about to vote on,
and the vote in the Senate,
will give the United States the strongest possible hand to stand up against the aggression of Russia.
In favor of the sanction bill.
Mandatory sanctions.
Is so overwhelming.
The yeas are 98.
The nays are 2.
98-2.
The bill is passed.
The message it sends to the White House and to Vladimir Putin is, you can try to veto it, but you'll be overridden.
So, David, that brings us to today. What do these sanctions that Congress has passed and that it looks like the president feels he has to sign on to because of the pressure you just described, what do they actually do?
Well, I would say that they are moderate sanctions. They could be a lot worse, but they limit some American investment in energy. They continue a group of sanctions that were imposed 3 years ago after the annexation of Crimea. But just as importantly, they require that Congress must approve if those sanctions are lifted. In other words, that the president does not have the authority to do that himself.
Ah, so they almost seem to sort of snatch the power over sanctions from the White House.
That's right.
As if to say, we don't quite trust you.
That's exactly right. And most presidents usually have complete power to at least suspend sanctions, as President Obama did with sanctions against Iran in order to get the Iran deal.
It's almost like Congress is taking the relationship out of the hands of these two men and saying, whoa, whoa.
And that's what's got Vladimir Putin disturbed. Because even if he thinks he understands Donald Trump and what makes him tick, he doesn't have any control over the Congress.
So how has Vladimir Putin responded to these sanctions and all their nuances that he no doubt does not like?
Well, the Russians made the usual statements that they would match the sanctions bit for bit, but they did a couple of other things. They have now turned around to announce that 755 diplomats and Russian employees of the American embassy and American consulates must be no longer working there by September 1st.
David, how does that work? How does Russia tell the United States how big its embassy staff should be? I mean, how do they go about basically firing American diplomatic workers?
Because they have the power to turn down visas and they have the power to revoke work permits.
And how big a deal is that?
Well, life will become difficult. The locals in the embassy are the ones who, you know, make the building run on time, and keep the heat running and shovel the walks in those long Russian winters. Will it fundamentally change the relationship with Russia? I doubt it. But it certainly puts a chill on things. And it has a faint whiff of the old Cold War.
David, I'm struck that there's kind of a great irony to this, that the fact that these two men pursued a closer relationship with one another ultimately means that they and their countries can't have one.
In the end, Michael, both leaders wildly overplayed their hands. Putin overplayed it by delving into the American election and then getting caught. It's fascinating, Michael. One of the things that President Putin said to President Trump during their meeting in Germany was, you know it wasn't me because if it had been me, we wouldn't have gotten caught. Well, that's ridiculous because the purpose of this hack was to spread false information about Hillary Clinton. It's a very hard kind of hack to hide. Now, President Trump also overplayed his hand. Had he not denied so vociferously the intelligence that indicated that it was Putin, he could have stepped out and said, look, I want a better relationship with the Russians, and I'm going to try to get one. But we're going to do this with our eyes wide open. And we know what they did in this election. And while I don't think it affected the outcome, I'm going to make sure it never happens again. And I'm going to start a commission to make sure that there's no foreign interference in those elections. Instead, he started a commission to go figure out if there were really 3 million votes that should have been cast for him but were illegally cast by immigrants. So we're in a strange place, Michael, where I think both leaders want to have a much better relationship, and both are sort of stuck. If you listen to Putin carefully, he said, you know, we waited for such a long time. We had hopes that the relationship would get better. And he seemed to suggest that he was hopeful that it still might, but recognize the reality that it probably won't.
David, thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Here's what else you need to know today.
It's my great privilege to be here today to bring a very simple message from the President of the United States of America, President Donald Trump.
With the tension between the U.S. and Russia rising,
Vice President Mike Pence is warning Putin that the U.S. will not tolerate Russian aggression towards its neighboring states.
We stand with the people and nations of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania.
After meeting with the presidents of the three former Soviet states, Pence pledged the U.S. would come to their defense if Russia threatened their security.
And an attack on one of us is an attack on us all.
And like Putin, Pence expressed disappointment that things hadn't turned out as planned.
We hope for better days, for better relations with Russia. But recent diplomatic action taken by Moscow will not deter the commitment of the United States of America to our security, the security of our allies, and the security of freedom-loving nations around the world.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.